On September 23, 1980, UFO investigator Leonard Stringfield received a letter that claimed to be from a former military security guard who had witnessed a series of events that sounded like they had come straight out of a science fiction double feature. Under the pseudonym James Morse, the author of the letter would begin a years-long correspondence with Stringfield that culminated in an alleged documentation of military service members coming into direct and violent contact with an extraterrestrial. Morse claimed to have witnessed the final minutes of an unidentifiable creature that had reportedly been shot by security personnel on the grounds of Fort Dix in New Jersey. Morse's claims would fall in line with a book released in 2019 by a military intelligence officer who claimed to have been stationed on that same base and said they had interviewed a number of personnel who were involved in the events of January 18, 1978. This case file joined the theorists as they shoot first, shoot again, shoot one more time, start to ask questions, but then shoot a couple more times while discussing the Fort Dix Xenocide.
Welcome to Alien Theorists Theorizing Case File 240, the Fort Dix McGuire Xenocide. We're calling it what it is, and that is straight up alien murder.
Boom.
Police brutality, right?
Alien lives matter, all right?
A story that is, you know, all too familiar with the United States, and that's the police shootings of minorities. And this one, of the ultimate minority, aliens.
Aliens. Space aliens.
Anyways. I mean, to be honest with you, too, like, they did just describe him as brown and gray with a big head and long arms. That could be me.
Short. Yeah.
All right? That's, short. That sounds like they're describing me. Short.
Describe him short.
Long arms, big head, grayish brown. Depends.
Depends the time of year. Is this winter? It was winter.
Yeah.
This is January. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I get pretty gray in the winter. It sucks.
Before we get into this, though, if you're listening to this as a podcast, it's July 1st today, and that means our new merch store is launched. Our merch store, they'll add some cool effects right there. Boom.
That's good. Those are cool. Those are cool enough, man. I'm just going to multiply. I'm just going to duplicate those and spread them across the stereo
Dan
field.
Dan practiced that, didn't you, Dan?
I do it all the time.
Guys, every month we're going to have new items up on the merch store. We don't have as much selection as we did before, but the stuff we have is cooler.
And quality at the end of the month, quantity. Simple. Yeah, simple as that, right?
It's gone.
We're in for the finer
and
things.
Then next month, there's going to be a new batch of stuff. But this month, if you head there right now, you can get the brand new Octo Jesus design. Sick, sweet. Right?
All hail.
Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
Ask me about Octo Jesus shirt. We've got Dan hat, the long requested Dan's hat. It's his hat that you're buying.
It is.
His hat.
It's literally
sweaty.
My hat.
He puts on everyone's hats.
All the hats.
He slightly sweats in every hat.
We've got the Keep Those Eyes on the Skies 5-panel hat available. We've got a ladies old UFO retro design tank top. We've got the best of both worlds shirt, surfer short, little breast that says alien theorists theorizing with a little mermaid on the back. Big old best of both worlds, baby, surf and turf. So check out our merch store. You can find that at alientheorists.com. Go down to the merch and you'll find it there. Only open July 1st.
Better only open. Everyone. Just one day. That's it.
One day.
Get all your merch right away. Treat yourself.
And there'll be a couple surprise designs on there too for you by the time this is out and you're checking it out.
There may or may not be Braden's red ginch.
Yeah, also, just a pair of ginch.
Those are cursed. Yeah. We already discussed this.
Well, this is why it's taking the merch store to take so long because I have to wear them all, right?
Gotta break them in. So hold on. Like, I didn't know you had a pair of red ginch. Get rid of them. Like, maybe you won't be the way you are if you don't wear red ginch. And that would be great.
What? Sorry, what?
It's just all starting to make sense now.
You think the Ginch makes the man?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Makes the curse.
Tell you. No.
Mind you, I think we're the ones that are cursed in this scenario, but that's fine.
Yeah, yeah. It might be
the reversed. I'm fine. Nothing wrong with me. You guys have to hang out with me. Now, this is really awesome case file because it is exactly, yeah, someone said in the chat, they are in fact scratch and sniff when you order these red Ginch.
Careful.
There's totally a whole bunch of different flavors, tutti frutti, tons. Right, whatever you want.
Sky train. Anyways,
this case file is awesome though because it is straight up police murder and alien. That's what it is. That's what we're talking about here today. It's an account of just can't say it any other way. Police shoot and kill an innocent alien doing nothing wrong. Maybe intruding. Maybe
trespassing.
Might
have been trespassing.
Right, right. But those are misdemeanors,
base,
baby.
Boys. On a right? Military base.
Shoot to kill? I don't think so. On Fort Dix, I don't think there's a shoot to kill order.
Yeah, there were no non-lethal measures deployed on this one. It was full, straight up murder.
I'm telling you right now. I'm telling you right now. I'm outraged because Zell jumps the fence. Zell hovers over the fence tomorrow night. Stand on the runway, wrist slap, and a fine. I bet. Right? Don't do that again. Little finger wag. Don't do that again. Right? This poor alien.
Blasted.
To be fair, though, Zell's almost blasted. Translucent. They probably wouldn't even see
it. Tough to hit me, especially at night.
Like floating clothes.
Yeah.
And that glow of the runway lights. Floating clothes. the fucking, what was that cryptid that we did with the...
The pants?
Nightwalker?
The phantom pants?
The walking pants.
Yeah. Night Stalker?
Yeah. Night Stalker. Night Creeper. Night Crawler.
Zell's just the floating clothes.
Fresno Nightcrawler. That's me.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. But yes.
So, if we're talking about this, this is probably one of the few cases where you have an actual claim of a shooting and killing, a retrieval of a body of an extraterrestrial being. Here, as we mentioned before, this occurred in the Fort Dix McGuire Joint Base. Now, the first that this event probably made its way into the kind of the UFO UFO world is when you had the late Leonard Stringfield, who passed away in 1994 after a long battle with lung cancer. He published a paper called "The Fatal Encounter at Fort Dix Dash McGuire, a case study." And he was writing this paper for a 1985 MUFON conference. So Stringfield received the original details of this account in a
napkin.
Maybe it might have been. It was a written account, which he received in a letter on September 23rd of 1980. Now, the letter, when it was sent to Stringfield, was authored by a James Morse, which was a pseudonym. And this James Morse. Yep.
The one thing I'll add to that is that a lot of accounts too say Jeff.
Jeff Morse.
There is some, right? Yeah, when we go in there, we might use James and Jeff interchangeably because they're kind of, well, there's kind of two different accounts that kind of corroborate with each other. But one, James Morse that I just referred to.
Well, it comes down to this. If you want to sound credible, you use James Morse. And if you want to sound like an idiot, you use Jeff.
What I don't understand though, like, we know it's a pseudonym. James Morse, man? Like, come on. Like, what the fucking Max Power or Cock Diesel or some shit like that? Like, come on, you can pick whatever you want. Yeah, motherfucking Cock Diesel.
Yeah, if you're gonna choose a pseudonym, you know.
Yeah,
my name's Cock Diesel, and I work on Fort Dix.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
It's an '80s porn script in the making right now.
Absolutely.
So James Morse claimed to be a security officer on McGuire at the time of the events that took place on the date in question. So in 1983, after frequent correspondence with Morse, Morse actually contacted Stringfield for the first time by phone and provided actual names and ranks of people who were involved in the incident. And he even sent Stringfield an alleged photocopy of an official document, a DD-1569 incident complaint report that he cited as evidence supporting his claims for what happened that night.
I mean, that would have to be pretty interesting that you're like, you're researching UFOs and you have this guy who's like, you're like, oh, hey, what you're telling me is pretty cool. And he's like, well, I also have like, here's some evidence to back it up for you. Like, you can dig into this. Here's some stuff. Like, for me, it's like, this is adds another layer to this thing where it's like, cause if someone just tells a story, it's like, well, I believe them or not. Right. But if they're giving you physical copies of stuff for be like, this is supporting evidence that I'm giving you. To me, I'm like, if that person's a hoaxer, like, you're now giving that person evidence that they can then look and verify and then go, well, why would you give me this? You're full of shit. Like, I know it. So it's like, it's interesting for him to get like actually hand over this, what he's claiming is evidence, right? Because it's a bold move one way or another, right? It just, to me, it
do we know brings, what it says like, on you, it? Like, do we know what the incident, like, do we know?
Yeah, it's just crayon drawing of what happened.
It's a standard form. I looked up like there's kind of like a modern version of it, but the actual legitimate form of it used to be on the only place that I could really find it was there was a the NIDS website. We'll talk about them later. NIDS comes into play. Robert Bigelow's National Institute for Discovery of Science. They come into play later, but they said they had an actual copy or the original like. Document that had been submitted to Stringfield. Now, when Stringfield got this, all of this information, that you know, was going through, the entire events and the interviews that he had from Morse, he was still on the fence as to whether he thought that Morse could be taken as a legitimate source. Like he was kind of ambivalent towards it. He wasn't really like 100% sold on it.
Yeah, as you rightly should, like looking at this, that you're like, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, cross the T's and dot the I's before I just go ahead and start screaming that, you know, I found real evidence here, right? Like he's putting his reputation on the line too. So he wants to verify this information before he just, you know, relays it.
And so enter Richard Hall, who is the former NICAP deputy director and a veteran UFO investigator, who got a chance to interview Morse as well and found him to be a credible source of information. So Stringfield would go ahead and reveal that story at the 1985 MUFON conference. And then Hall would actually later include a lot of Morse's information and his account in his book, The UFO Evidence, a 30-year report, which he published at volume 2, which he published in 2001.
Right.
Now, another facet of the story would later reappear would appear to be featured in a book that was released in 2019 and rather recently by John L. Guerra, which is titled Strange Craft, The True Story of an Air Force Intelligence Officer's Life with UFOs.
Yeah.
So
it should have been Life with the Guilt of
Murder,
Xenocide.
Well, the actual event that we're referring to, the Fort Dix McGuire event, is actually just a small part of the book. And the book actually covers a lot of experiences by retired Air Force Major George Filer III during his actual military career. He had UFO encounters himself, like aside from the, in addition to the actual being stationed at stationed at the base, the McGuire Air Force Base, when the events in question occurred. So, but part of this is he was stationed as part of the intelligence officer of the 21st Air Force Military Airlift Command. And he was the one who was in charge of the briefings. So he's like, he had the same information as Morse. Him and Morse were stationed on kind of both sides of the fence of both the Fort Dix and the McGuire Air Force Base that kind of sit together. So now the event in question occurred on January 18th of 1978. So in 1978, Fort Dix was home to the U.S. Army ground operations, while McGuire, which sat on the other side of a fence from Fort Dix, hosted the U.S. Air Force 21st Air Force Military Airlift Command. Now, from Filer, Filer was actually 43 years old at this time, and he would leave his home at about 3 a.m., morning.
Just to interject here, he goes on to have one of the best websites of all time, Filer's Files.
Mm.
the best name for a website. Awesome. Like, what, guy's a genius.
I got a quick question about this, about the bases. Is this a standard thing to have like an army base and an air force base like bordering on the fence? Can they cross the border? Does their IDs work in each other's bases, or are they completely separate?
They have different areas of operation. So they're going to have either one on it. It's each base has its own security force. So you can't really you wouldn't be able to kind of perform like any duties on the other side of the base. You wouldn't like exchange personnel or anything.
Could you pop over for a potluck?
I mean, you could probably go over there, but there's not like you would be, they just don't want you to be where you're not supposed to be. I'm sure.
Shirtless or anything?
Yeah. Well, that's what I say. I feel like the Air Force base will end up being like
every Saturday. Yeah, sure.
Fucking Eagleton to Pawnee. You know what I mean? Like all the fucking snooty guys are over at the Air Force base.
Oh, I feel like they all have scarves.
Yeah. Generally in the United States military or armed services, the Air Force is usually kind of seen as people refer to them as the chair force. Since it's mostly desk jobs, or seems like that way anyways.
So what I got all those sweet ass fucking code names then?
Top Gun is, those are Navy pilots.
Nickname's Hangman.
Oh. Navy pilots, they're not Air Force.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right. So I'm sure the Air Force has their own pilot. They have their own names as well. So
yeah. Code name Milton, like you said. Hilbert.
So you have Filer saying that, reporting that he left his home at about 3 a.m. and was driving towards McGuire to go ahead and start his day, because his task usually was at 8 a.m. to kind of brief his bosses on the goings on in the base. He would go on about 3 a.m. He'd get there. He'd collect reports from all the people who were on watch or whatever. And then he would brief the commander of the base every morning at about 8 a.m. So, but this time, this morning, he noticed a kind of strange thing, something out of the ordinary. He saw the red and blue emergency lights flashing in the distance near the Fort Dix fence line.
Cherries and berries.
Mm-hmm.
So this was something that was extremely out of the ordinary, and Filer was kind of keen to figure out what was going on at the time.
I guarantee you, you're driving up, you're like, fuck, yeah. What's going on?
It's pretty much. I know the feeling. I've come on watch and been like, what the fuck? Like alarms going off and stuff. And like, oh, fuck. Like, this is going to be a bunch of paperwork or whatever. You're going to have to write a bunch of reports.
Yeah, you're like, I don't want to see anything.
So the first person he wanted to get in contact with was the senior master sergeant. So the senior master sergeant on the base is the one who kind of keeps everything organized according to him, you know, staff schedules, making sure everything down to the phones and the faxes that are up and running, and pretty much anybody who's sweeping the floors. Like, that is what his job was. So Filer met with the senior master sergeant to figure out, you know, what the fuck is going on. And according to Filer, this is kind of his quote, is saying that he was agitated. His face was pale. His eyes were wide open. And then he said the strangest thing. So straight up, this is a quote from Filer saying that senior master sergeant told him, an alien has been shot at Fort Dix and they found it at the end of our, referring to the McGuire Air Force Base, runway.
So something, an alien has been shot. It's been found, was shot at the other base, and they found the body deceased on the runway of the other base. Like, he's probably sitting there like, what?
So Filer, I mean, I'd be nonplussed at this point, because I'd be like, it's 3 a.m. Like, it's 3:30 at most, maybe 4, and you'd have somebody telling that that's an alien. So, you know, George tries to clarify at this point, you know, that somebody just told him it is.
What country is he from?
Yeah. He recalls saying that, was it an alien from another country, like a Mexican or something?
Shot is this New Jersey, though? Like, this is Jersey. How's he getting
it? Should have been Canadian or something
from fucking Mexico and Jersey.
He's been running a long way.
Yeah.
A long way.
And they didn't catch him till Jesus.
Yeah. Imagine that. He jumps the border, makes his way all the way to New Jersey, and then immediately goes to a military base. even though there was probably thousands on the way, he's just like, no, I've always wanted to see the inside of Fort Dix. That's where the secrets are. Now it makes me want to, what are they hiding in Fort Dix?
So the senior master sergeant was, went ahead and clarified. He said, no, it was from outer space, a space alien. And he also reported that there had been a number of UFOs that night. He relayed to Filer that there had been strange occurrences before Filer even arrived, like during the wee hours of the morning, probably around, I think it was around midnight or 11 p.m., they had UFOs actually buzzing around the Air Force, around the joint bases in patterns. That's what they reported to him.
Now, see, like when you hear that bit, like these UFOs are buzzing around in patterns like that, it's like, that is not far off of like what we've reported, what the government now has said has happened. And right, we just had the first congressional hearing on UFOs. I'm like, it would be so cool for something like this to be brought up in one of the next ones of like, because they're talking about like military disclosure, and we've had people ask questions about various other like, Malmstrom. All right. So, this is not far off where someone could be like, well, we've heard reports of there's UFOs and one potentially being shot. Can we look into that? Right. Like, if there's reports, they might be somewhere, right, of what happened at this base. Even if they've wiped off everything else to do with the murder or anything, perhaps there's still reports of, around this time, UFO consistently buzzing the space. And does this base hold nuclear weapons? And do we know that? I didn't even look that up.
Not that's public knowledge, at least.
No, those are all in Victoria.
Nanaimo.
Nanaimo. Yeah.
Nanaimo.
American nukes are in Nanaimo because we don't have any.
None.
So George went on with doing his job and had to go ahead and start interviewing everyone who was involved with this base. Now, the Fort Dix Army base next door to McGuire Air Force Base has its own security guard. So they kind of conducted their own thing.
He's like, what happened over here? He's like, go fuck yourself.
go get paid to sit on your ass. Like,
yeah.
And
Army George, for life!
George claims that he was the only Air Force investigator to interview witnesses and to compile an actual report on the day that this event occurred. Now, when the alien was claimed to have been shot, it was said to have been shot by an Army security guard on the Fort Dix property. So on the Fort Dix side. And then the alien had actually, they said, reported had either run and either jumped the fence or went under the fence onto the McGuire property where they had found the actual body of this reported extraterrestrial being. So, Filer reported that he called the security duty officer who confirmed that this alien had been found. It's
fucking McGuire's problem now.
when talking to the security duty officer, he confirmed, according to Filer, that the dead alien body had been found by a McGuire security policeman, and the duty officer told him that the alien had been shot on Fort Dix. And then they had tracked this wounded alien for as far as they could until they found it out near like one of the abandoned airstrips on the base. So Filer is also able to compile reports from the radar tower. And he had gotten reports from operators there that had actually been tracking those UFOs that he had gotten reports of that had started around 2 a.m. that morning. And then they had even said that they had reported actual visual confirmation of the craft and that they had reported that these craft were actually disc shaped.
This was a lot to process. We should stop here for a second.
Yeah.
So they have sightings of a UFO or multiple UFOs.
Yeah.
Then there's an alien on the ground.
Yes.
Like one alien by himself, seemingly.
By himself.
And they shoot him.
That's what's reported. So
this is fucking crazy. This has never happened in all the case files we've talked about.
No.
That they open fire on a live extraterrestrial or what they think is extraterrestrial. What if it wasn't? They just killed someone. Some kid or something running across the fucking tarmac.
It's the 70s, man.
It got pretty nuts at some point. Like you had Army MPs pursuing these craft in their pickup trucks.
Yeah, like they would have sounded some sort of alarm before because they were scrambling to like pursue these things. They saw them in the skies. They're like, what the fuck are these things? There's something in the sky. They're racing around, like following these things around Fort Dix, like chasing them.
That's wild.
So one of these pickup trucks, shortly after 3 a.m., had actually realized, apparently, it was as reported by a Fort Dix MP that was involved in it. He realized that there was a UFO above their truck, directly above their truck. And it was right near where the fence separating between Fort Dix and McGuire. So the MP reported that he exited his vehicle, looked up at the hovering UFO. And then when he looked back down, he realized that there was a short humanoid figure stepping into the pickup truck's headlights, where the headlights were pointed. So
we're talking, we got a little gray. We got a short gray.
Yep.
On the base. All right.
The description of it is like big head, short, you know, gray
brownish
skin,
gray.
Brownish gray skin, like skinny arms, like the stereotypical, like what you hear people. Great. This guy's looking up at this UFO that has been buzzing their base. It's now above his truck.
He looks up. Chances.
He looks down and boom, he's now face to face. You know, I don't know how far away, but like it's in the headlights. He's like, holy shit, there's fucking. Like you would immediately when you saw this thing, you'd be like, oh my, it's an alien. Like alien, obviously, it's an alien.
And then you've just been buzzing UFOs.
Yeah.
Get rid of it.
Well, the MP seemed to fall back on his training and went to the first thing. He ordered the intruder to freeze. You know, I'm sure he wasn't sure whether it was a human or what was going on, but he went straight into, you know, security mode and did what he thought, you know, followed the book at this point, being he ordered it to freeze. And so it's reported that the MP kind of like when he was talked with later, interviewed later, his goal was to arrest this intruder and he was going to take him to the Fort Dix security office. That's what should have happened, I guess. If this were normal, under normal circumstances, like this is what would have happened. But when this humanoid figure walked toward the MP or somehow ignored the warning that he was given, the MP felt obliged to.
Oh yeah, open it's been fire. Revoked. It's been it's revoked been for sure.
Yeah. Revoked.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this keep the change, MP's yelling at him like, "Hands up, turn around, stop!" Like all the commands.
Freeze! Yeah. Don't move.
Yeah. And he obviously
a little bit of a language barrier.
Bit of a language barrier. this motherfucker might not even have ears.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's just walking.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the MP opened fire and fired upon this extraterrestrial being five times is what's reported.
Five times.
Five shots.
He didn't pop him to the knee and say.
There was no warning shot.
There was no warning shot.
picture that scene in your head for a second though. Like these UFOs are buzzing. It's middle January. It's cold as fuck. It's like super dark, right? January, super dark month. It's pitch black out there. You are face to face with this little humanoid, this alien, like you would instantly recognize this as you're like, this is a fucking alien right in front of me.
Well,
in the headlights.
It's the 70s though. Like what exactly, like I think Close Encounters came out recently, but other than that, like what examples of short grays did we have around this time?
The only non-believer, the only part of this story that I don't believe for a second was that he then pulled his pistol. Motherfucker had that pistol out when those things were over his head. Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
I think there was actually reports that they did fire at the craft. I don't know if it was him specifically, yeah. but there were reports of them actually firing at the craft at some point.
So you got your gun out and you're yelling at this thing, right? Because at this point, it's like if anyone's ever had been face to face with an animal that you're yelling at, like if you've ever had an encounter with a black bear or anything, where you're yelling at it and you're raising your hand or anything, and that black bear takes that first couple steps towards you because it doesn't know which way you're going to go, your heart stops a little when you're like, oh no, this isn't working. Like, he's not going the other way. I was told he would leave when I did this.
If I yell, hey bear, he's supposed to run away.
And you've got this gun at this little thing and it's now just cruising towards you. I mean, how long do you wait to
start? So anyways, I start blasting.
instantly. Like, I might have not even waited that long, to be honest.
I probably
would have been too scared.
What's the worst? Let's be honest, dude. This is New Jersey. You add another one to the Hudson? Come on.
And, hey, by the sounds of it, he was light, right? You could just
exactly.
Whip him in there.
So many shoes, man.
Right? He'd dissolve in an hour.
Yeah.
So there's a report that the MP panicked and fired 5 rounds from his 45 into the thing, referring to the extraterrestrial, and then actually 1 round into the object above. So
he's just for good measure, bang, 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 and for you, bang.
And tell your friends, eh?
Yeah.
That was reported by Rick Murray, who wrote a June 10, 2007 article for the Trentonian newspaper that kind of reported that. Provided details from a witness who is familiar with the events that happened.
I just want to emphasize that you shoot this thing 5 times.
Bang!
You
bang,
shoot it 5 bang, times bang, and it bang. Just runs away and jumps the fence. You're just like, I don't even know what I'd do. I'd shoot at the ship too right after. it makes sense.
Now, George Filer never got access to the actual MP that fired on the extraterrestrial.
I thought they had video footage of that, though, didn't they? Did we watch the tapes?
I think there is actually some videotape of it. Let's see if I can find that right now. I think it goes a little something like this.
Greetings, human. I am Gliznorp. I come in peace.
Hey, yo! Stop resisting, eh?
You a human? You shot me in the arm.
All right. Hey, listen here, spaceman. It's pretty dark out, all right? I thought you had a gun, all right? So just, I don't think it's fatal. It's one shot, whatever, all right? I need you to freeze. Hey! I need you to freeze.
We still come in peace. I would like... From my world to yours.
Spaceman! You threatening me? Huh? You threatening me?
Human, now listen here, Spaceman. You shot me again.
All right.
You shot me in the glebe sac.
All right, now
that's
listen
right
here.
That's right where the human heart would be, luckily
all right,
for
I
me.
I understand this. I need you to be quiet for a second. I need you to freeze. But I also need you to reach into your pocket and grab your ID, all right? I told you not to move!
Human, my species doesn't feel pain, but...
All right. Listen,
spaceman.
Why
aren't my legs working?
You're going to be okay.
I can't feel my legs.
Listen here, spaceman. I need you to crawl over to your ship there and grab your license registration, all right?
Luckily for
me... don't move! Don't move, spaceman! All right. You got the right to remain... You got the right... Oh, shit. Spaceman? Are you dead? Oh, man. It's a real shame, spaceman, you decided to travel all this way with all that drugs in your hands here, huh? So we're going to go ahead and give you some of this, huh? Hey, boys! I don't know what's going on over here. I think this guy took some bath salts. He went crazy. He took my gun.
Very accurate.
I'd say so.
So he shot him five times. Then he framed him with drugs, just in case.
Wait, space. He had space rocks on
space,
him.
Yeah, space rocks.
Space meth. Okay.
He had space meth.
Meteoroids.
Space meth, right?
Checks out. He told him to freeze.
Yeah,
he didn't
follow instructions.
And he kept coming forward.
Come on.
That's four more shots.
Yeah. He's just following training.
I mean, listen, five shots couldn't kill Tupac. All right? He probably thought he was tough enough to take five shots.
One shot too many in this case.
Yeah, probably. In the glebe sack.
Yeah.
So after taking a shot to the glebe sack, this extraterrestrial either ran under the fence or climbed over it, after leaving the site.
It was under. Because his legs were limp. Because he was paralyzed. And he was just trucking on his two little front, right? But he's light, so he can still move fast, right? His lower body's
really,
pretty light.
Really quick.
So his upper body can still pull it really. So he slithered away like a snake real quick. There was a report that he was greasy.
So directly following the MP shooting this creature.
Five times. That's how they found him. They followed the slug trail.
I mean, we have to emphasize that it started at Fort, like the account starts on Fort Dix. So they shot him on the Fort Dix property, and then it moved over onto McGuire's base. It moved it somewhere onto the McGuire property.
Just before we get to the other side of the fence, we're going to take a short break, grab a beer, and we'll be.
There's lots more to this lots more. Coming up.
We'll be right back.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Just so you guys are clear, I made up Gleebsack. I don't know if that's any...
I'm a medical professional. It sounds right.
Gleebsack sounds right.
I don't
right.
know if that's part of the autonomy right. of an alien, but I just wanted to make sure like...
The Gleebsack's like on the bottom of their chin, I believe.
Atomy? What did I say?
You said autonomy.
Anatomy?
It's anatomy.
Autonomy.
Yeah. Dude, I've been really struggling with words in the heat. All right.
In the heat. Okay.
Yeah.
Just in the heat?
Well, I feel like I was pretty good through the winter.
Oh, so when your brain gets a little hotter, you just lose it. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, there was another word just recently. What was the other one? Posthumously or whatever.
Well, that was not a word I've ever really heard before, and you just pulled it out of nowhere.
Posthumously.
Is that, how do I say it?
Posthumously?
Yeah.
I fucked it up one time too, and Dan gave me a fucking...
You're like dead, right? That's your dead?
Well, it's something that happens after you died.
Yeah.
What is it? Posthumously.
Yeah.
Posthumously?
Would you call it posthumously?
Yeah, I fucked up on that the other night. I said like posthumously.
Well, because you're reading it, right?
I mean, it's technically.
You remember?
If you think about it, you're not funny when you're dead.
So. Oh, you know of.
Sometimes dead people fart and stuff. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. Where were we?
Alien places, shot.
So. We got a lot more to go through this case.
Alien gets shot. It crawls under the fence, and that's where we left off. Yeah. We don't know
screaming
what happened.
Screaming in pain with its lifeless lower body.
Limp lower body.
Can't ride. It's a wounded animal, basically. Oh, yeah. Trigger warning.
So,
literally.
Up until this point, we've been going off of the account of George Filer. So, all the kind of the events that were leading up to this, you went off of George's kind of George's reports, which came out later. Like, George Filer actually didn't put his part of the story down on paper until probably like the 2000s or so. But we have known about the Stringfield account, which he got from Jeff or James Morse. It comes in right here. So at the time, should I refer to him? James Morse? That's more professional, right? So James Morse.
Right.
James Morse was actually a security guard on duty, and he was sent by the dispatch by his security commander to go out to gate number 5 on the base to let in a state trooper who had been called in and told Morse that someone had been shot on the Fort Dix side and had jumped the fence onto the McGuire side of into the McGuire property. So the trooper was obliged to follow Morse's vehicle to the fence line, and the two got out and began searching the area with their flashlights. Now, it was the state trooper and Morse together when that found the actual humanoid figure, and depending on who you ask, there's a little bit of kind of wiggle room about what actually position. So one was either the creature was either kneeling in death about to die, or it was sprawled out on its back. So there's still kind of, there's a little bit of,
Both are pretty sad.
Not a happy tale.
But if it was kneeling in death, it was dead when they found it. Now, after the trooper, once they had gone and radioed it in, I guess the Morse told, let's see, who is he talking to? He was talking to Filer at this point. So Filer said that Morse told him that he actually radioed the security command post at McGuire and told his supervisor and said, "Hey, there's a body out here. We found
it. Hey, there's a body out here."
And the security commander then told Morse to go ahead and put the trooper on the phone or on the radio. And Morse's supervisor went ahead and told the state trooper that the matter was now under Air Force jurisdiction and that McGuire would handle it.
Yeah, get out of here, you fucking statey.
Kick rocks, nerds.
Now, after the trooper left, Morse was left alone with the body of this entity.
He's just like, ugh.
Selfie
with it.
I think he took measures to kind of just to preserve the crime scene. I think he was kind of putting around tape and doing what he was kind of trained to do.
I imagine because of all the radio chatter about what had just transpired, that I bet at this point in time when the state trooper is like told to leave and he's standing there, I can almost guarantee there's like this moment of like, there's a couple minutes where it's just silent for him. And he's just like, fuck. Now I'm just waiting. I'm waiting for to do what
really
to do.
He's like,
what
should I do? Doesn't get up.
Yeah. So he's like, all right, well, I guess it's a crime scene. I guess I'll rope some shit off. I guess I'll put up some rope. I'll try to look busy as I'm waiting for the other foot to drop here.
I'm sure they told him just to, fucking sit tight and wait,
He stand outlined by
and
it.
Wait. That's it. Mm-hmm. Hurry up and wait. So after the trooper left, and Morse reported that he, after staying alone with his body, he kind of remarked about having an ammonia smelling scent that was kind of like, it wasn't constantly in the air, but it seemed to be emanating up from the body of this creature.
That's interesting. So it's like either the blood or whatever is coming out of it is like smells of ammonia.
Well, they never described any blood.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, okay, so whatever holes are in this thing, it's like ammonia is seemingly like wafting right out.
Or some kind of accelerated decomposition could be something weird, or you know? Could be something like that.
Like we like Andrew said, you fart when you die. We let out methane, right? This thing's ammonia farts.
Or maybe some people talk about the short grays maybe not being biological at all, and it's some type of android, and it's like the fluid inside of it.
And it's not bleeding.
Oh. Not bleeding.
It's not bleeding.
And it took 5 shots, and it crawled away on it. Like most people, even if you get shot in the spinal cord, even if you're not paralyzed in the arms, like you're not moving, like you're, it's psychologically hurt.
The fish shot hit the microprocessor.
So maybe that, because some people say like, oh, if they are some type of android or like, they're like,
I dig that.
Almost like a drone technology,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I dig it.
Boom. Because then say they are sending them through space linear. Like not through wormholes and not through some type of teleportation or subspace or whatever. How they're actually they put them in a ship and they took 5,000 years to get here because they're androids. They don't age. And maybe that's what it is.
And maybe that's just what they think humans look like. So they're like, oh, this thing will blend in. Oh, no, it doesn't. Yeah.
Close
it got
enough.
Shot five times.
They're like, put it on the base. Yeah. He's standing in the headlight. Yeah. And they start shooting. He's like, oh, no, abort. Make it run.
Perhaps.
There's some guy, there's some alien in the spaceship playing QWOP. What, remember that game? That stupid running game where you try to control the legs on the keyboard. They just couldn't work it yet.
You can't get more than like 6 feet.
So Morse is out there guarding the body. And so now we check off another box of the classic alien encounter is that you had, he reported that you had a bunch of guys in blue military fatigues and blue berets, as he recalls, arrive in a C-141, which is it's a large cargo plane, military cargo plane. And he indicated that he had some inkling that this plane had arrived from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, which is just a hop over the mountain.
Interesting. I found that, I won't get into it too much because we're going to talk about it and then I'll touch on it then. But this part, really based on some previous case files we've talked about, really tied in for me.
Now, Morse reported that these personnel that showed up, he wasn't really familiar with their insignias or anything, or seemed to have any idea of kind of who they are other than that they were in military fatigues. Wearing these blue berets.
We know who they are.
We know who they are.
Pretty much told him, you
70s,
can...
70s, you know who's wearing blue berets in the 70s.
Absolutely.
God damn it, Jim. What are we doing here?
God damn it, Jim. He's been on ice all night. We had to speed things up. We have a new buyer.
We got it. God damn it, Jim. We got a buyer already.
God damn it, Jim. They came in and beat all the other offers.
God damn it, Jim. You're not talking about that goddamn lunatic with that oldest tractor, are you?
God damn it, Jim. That guy's tied up in Minnesota right now.
God damn it, Jim. We're not talking about that son of a bitch. We're not selling this thing to that son of a bitch, Rick Dyer. He's not going to cover this thing in possum furs and call it Littlefoot as he traveled around the continental U.S. He's not going to do that like he did with that reptilian we sold him.
God damn it, Jim. We're not making that mistake again. Fool me once. Shame on him.
God damn it, Jim. Don't tell me we're selling it to that gorilla grip male gigolo Robert Bigelow.
God damn it, Jim. I'm still missing some skin, but no. Listen, Jim, we got a buyer in Chile.
In Chile, we're selling it to the South Americans.
God damn it, Jim. I'm talking bigger than that. I'm talking Arab money.
God damn it, Jim. We're getting that Saudi prince gas money.
God damn it, Jim. He came in with $65. You want to know what put it over the top? A Pepsi.
A Pepsi?
Two Pepsi.
Just one, Jim.
Two, Jim.
God damn it, Jim. You're a national hero. You're going to go down as one of the greatest blue berets of all time, Jim. God damn it. Just out of curiosity, how much is this little operation costing the taxpayers?
God damn it, Jim. It costs taxpayers $3.65 million.
God damn it, Jim.
It's a write-off,
You're a
though.
Genius. Goddamn write-offs. You got to spend the budget to make the budget, Jim.
Absolutely.
It's basically what happened.
That's what happened.
So Morse was told by these blue berets to pretty much back off and given the instruction to go ahead and leave, take his leave, and that they were going to kind of handle this and whatever. So Morse didn't feel like he really had to leave, so he moved back some distance but he didn't leave the area. So Morse actually observed the operations that were
just chilling. Well, as you would.
Yeah.
I was like, if no one told me directly to leave, I'd be like, all right, well, I'm just gonna stand over here.
Yeah. And plus, like, it's like, I don't think anybody had arrived from actual McGuire to kind of tell him to kind of, you know, fuck off. It's just like, I'm just gonna stand over here. I'm still doing my job, because if I leave here, then, you know, something happens, I'm gonna be in trouble.
What's Morse's rank?
I don't remember off the top of my head. I think it's still, he was just security guard or one of these.
So he's things, a security guard. Why the fuck does this guy have any idea if Wright Force Patterson Airbase, whatever, are sending guys to come pick something up?
So like, I think he had heard something.
Why would he be
radio
in the know for this? That makes no sense to me. It.
Like, I think he kind of heard over the radio, kind of the squawking over the radio.
You don't think they'd be keeping guys where this fucking alien body's going pretty fucking hush hush though? Is that some rando security guard's like, oh, these guys must be going right Force Patterson or whatever.
Wright Patterson is still like, it's a functional airbase. So, I mean, it's like, it still does other things. It's just kind of be
But still, but they, you know, they're taking the body there. Would they not want to fucking hide that and keep that hush?
Well, maybe they didn't. Maybe they didn't bring it there. Maybe they said they're going to bring it there to throw you off the trail and they actually brought it somewhere
that
else.
That would make sense.
They brought it to S4.
That's what I mean.
I just imagine in this pandemonium, you have this because like Morse says that these guys show up and like they have some shit. They like come, they're spraying it with some like garden sprayer. They're spraying some clear chemicals all over the body. They're wrapping it in sheets. They're boxing it up. Like there is some serious like containment shit going on in front of him. So it's like
Of course, things smell bad.
In this pandemonium of like, they're obviously, this is all happening quick. This is a fluid situation. So if these things, if they're like, we have a body, you need to come get it now. Maybe in this like pandemonium of trying to like, they've shot a fucking alien on the base, and this pandemonium set in that maybe over the radio they're like, plane's coming in from Wright Patty right now for pickup and contamination. Like I don't see that out of the realm of possibilities. And I'll get into a little more.
They slip in is what you're saying.
Yeah.
So like Brayden said, all of this happened within a relatively short amount of time. Now you had the Blue Berets kind of wrap up the body in the Morse reported plastic sheeting was kind of deployed. You had a wooden crate put around it, and then that wooden crate was kind of put in, you know, Russian nesting doll style inside of an aluminum, what seemed to be like an aluminum box about the size of a military casket, according to
now.
To
see, Morse. the other thing too is like, you know, him saying that they use like a garden sprayer to coat the alien body with clear liquid. To me, I'm like, one, like, what do you guys think that would have been? And like, doesn't that seem to you like they've obviously done this before? Because like, if you're spraying, like you don't, if this is an alien body and you're spraying it, like you don't know what's that going to do to the body. Right. So obviously
it's something to preserve it, I would imagine, to slow down the decomposition.
But maybe that's because they've had bodies before, so they know that's not going to affect. Because you don't know what the fuck's going to happen to it when you spray it with anything on Earth, right? Like they could have sprayed it with this liquid and it just melted, and they would have been like, "Oh shit, what just happened?" Like it's so rushed to me. Like how fast this all like is reported to happening, it makes me like when I first read this, I thought, it sounds like they know what they're doing for this situation.
Well, how
like
many encounters have we had before this? We've had Roswell. How many other things have we had before?
How many 74? Do we know about? That's the question. Yeah.
Like we've had some. I'm sure they've got experience. I'd imagine they have some type of fucking highly trained team to go recover fucking UFO bodies. All that type of shit at this point.
And knocking them out of the sky left and right. They go spray this formaldehyde preservative all over them and bring them back to Hangar 18, suspend them in the pink jelly.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go to it again. They sprayed it in clear liquid. They wrap it in a plastic sheeting of some kind. They built a wooden crate around it. Then they put the wooden crate into an aluminum box.
They put that box
the
in
size
a box.
Of a military casket, right? Yep.
They're preserving the body.
Yep.
And then they loaded it into an ambulance.
And drove it to the C-141 that was waiting some distance away to go ahead and take it off, assumedly, I guess, back to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio.
Is a C-141 like a transport?
Yeah, it's a cargo plane. It's a cargo plane. Starliner? I think it's like a
one of those like a big, like huge
it's a
body.
It's a big plane. Like it's not
transport
it's not
tanks
one.
And shit or what?
Yeah, C-130, what did I say, 141?
E-141.
Dude, all I'm saying is
Starlifter. It's a big fucker.
It's interesting to me that they take off to Wright Patty because we know that, like, you know, some people call that Area 52. And it's like that's home to the Foreign Technologies Division, right? Where they, like back in World War II, who all they did was reverse engineer like shit they found. And we talked about it on the Wright Patterson Air Force Base that like if there was a down crash at that time of Roswell and stuff, you probably would have brought it to these people that are reverse engineering foreign technologies, because even though you don't know what it is, that's their job. Like that's what they specialize in taking stuff they don't know and figuring out how it works. So if that's the case with Roswell and these things that they've actually been going to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, maybe that's why they're in a hurry to get this thing there, because they're like, we already have bodies at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base that we've, you know, done autopsies on, we've studied, we've just never had one this fresh. So that's why they're like, the rush is on.
It'd make a lot of sense to study the anatomy to figure out how to like use their machinery.
Yeah.
Right? Like that would be, that's interesting.
Right. So that's what I kind of thought when I was like, when I like alarm bells were going off, I'm like, man, that kind of to me points again to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base being more than meets the eye.
Transformer.
Yeah.
More than meets right? like the there's, eye.
I still think that's where you're taking these at this time, maybe not now, but at this time, that's where you're taking any of this shit is to that foreign technologies division.
Hangar 18.
Yeah. Yep.
So according to Richard Hall's book that was published in early 2000, you had 2 days later, Morse and the other participants of the that were involved in the event were actually taken to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And there they underwent interrogation and were warned not to speak, specifically not to speak about the incident. So
there was one report that stood out to me when he's talked, because he's like, oh yeah, you know, I talked to, you know, XYZ, they gave me their badge and stuff. Their identities have been verified. But he goes like, he's like, you know, there was two officers, one holding a pipe and a civilian. I was like, what? One holding a pipe? I was like to beat Sherlock. You with? Mm. Like, I wasn't sure, but now I'm thinking like, yeah, maybe a Sherlock pipe. But yes. In my head, when he was like, it was a very intimidating interrogation. I was like, well, yeah, if motherfucker's sitting there smacking a pipe against his hand, you're not going to talk, eh? See?
I know. And then after this, apparently, all of the people involved...
You just gave me the old, yeah, no?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
According to Morse, this precipitated him being deployed overseas, and he was sent to another Air Force base in Okinawa. And then other, like he implies that all of the people who participated in this were all sent to different far flung bases, like way outside. So they were unable to communicate with each other, or to make it at least more difficult for them to communicate about what happened that night. So they're all kind of gone, sent out to wherever. You had this kind of story bouncing around for a while. So you had it in 1978, this actually, the events in question occurring.
Mm.
But you have the, and it kind of just sat around for a while. It's like the story, like it, once it came out in 1985 at the MUFON conference, you know, published in the one paper by Stringfield, you have the, later on, it's like almost like 20 years later, you had NIDS get involved. So this is another kind of little facet to the story. So if everybody remembers NIDS, everybody's favorite National Institute for Discovery Science, those boys out, woo! They hang out in Skinwalker Ranch, OGs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. they went in to actually investigate the events that were associated with this this report. So the deputy director at the time was Dr. Colm Keller, whose specialty, as you know, according to them, is cattle mutilations. I guess you can make that a specialty, I suppose. And he tasked a special investigator named Roger Pinson, who was at the time, I think he was a retired police officer, an investigator. I think he was kind of like worked in kind of the security field following that, but he was tasked with investigating the actual, the reports of this, of the events of 1978. Now, the thing is what I find kind of interesting is the way that NIDS went into this. Now, we know NIDS has been out there, you know, intimately involved with some of the things that were going on Skinwalker Ranch, and even in parts of the ATIP, like part mm-hmm. of them reaches into there as well, because they were involved with extraterrestrial. I think they're kind of like on the sidelines with the extraterrestrial materials that had been recovered, that were reported to have been recovered at some point when we're in their possession, or at least in possession of Bigelow Airspace, but at Bigelow, who runs NIDS until it was disbanded in 2004. But prior to that, they had this investigation going into 2000 into these, the events of, you know, January 1978. Now, if you want to, you can look it up. Like, I would suggest that everybody kind of look it up, because like Roger Pinson's investigation is a pretty solid way and well-documented investigation into something of this. Now, when Pinson went through most of these things, he did a lot of legwork, did a lot of phone calls, a lot of contacting people. In the course of the investigation, Pinson said that he managed to interview at least several former McGuire Air Force Base officials. And these officials that he got in contact with didn't give any corroborating evidence of the events that were reported by Morse.
That's because they were threatened with their families being killed.
Well, no, or just being shipped away from your family. It's like, hey, you want to talk about this? You're going to Okinawa, my friend.
And so this would be, I mean, this was 20 years. This is almost, like I said, 20 years after the fact. So this is 2000 is when the investigation started.
The threats linger.
And so when he talked to, at least, he said four senior military officers who were stationed at McGuire Air Force Base at the time of the incident were interviewed by Roger Pinson, and who was experienced and reported to have extensive training in interviewing and interrogation techniques, as well as detection of deception, which I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
Detection of deception.
I can smell a lie.
And most of these interviews were, I believe they're all pretty much, like they were all performed over the phone, which is, you know, I don't think he met with any of them in person. At least one of the ones that he had the most correspondence with, like all of the conversations were held by phone.
But here's the thing, you know what, I'll say this to this. You know, the last line of these officers responded insisting that they should have known about the incident if it occurred. Well, maybe they should have had it been reported properly, but like this happened at 3 a.m. and by the time this other group's coming in and picking it up, it's all just getting rugs like swept under a rug before it goes anywhere, right? Maybe that's how it operates. When these military officers come in for their 9-to-5 shift or whatever the fuck they do, right? It's already been cleaned, wrapped, right? No more reporting. It's sealed. Right. They're just like, go on. Don't worry about it. Go up, go back on with your day. Right. You're just, next thing you know, you're reading logs for the next day, keeping work. Right. You told to pay no mind to it. Right. By a higher up. Why would you remember that? Right. If someone came into me tomorrow at my work and was like, hey, don't worry about what happened at 6. I just need you to go sweep the floor. I'd go, okay, I'll go sweep the floor.
But like the levels of people that would have been involved in this, like even to the local police were involved in it.
Yeah, but
and the only person you're getting any fucking information from is the Morse guy. Like, I don't know. There's so many fucking different agencies. You have two different fucking, you have Army and fucking Air Force. You have local police. You have fucking gunshots being shot. Like, I don't know.
The threats to their family were extreme, and that's why they all kept their mouth shut.
Right. Or just like, yeah, you're going to get demoted and stuff and you're going to go nowhere. Like
happened in 74. These guys are fucking retired now. Let's talk about it.
Deathbed confessions. Let's go.
Well, didn't Morse say in the interrogation that they made him sign something that was basically like he was liable for life for like keeping quiet? Like they made him sign documents that he said it had something to do with that. They were binding for life. The documents that he signed.
Yeah, he was led to believe some sort of document that put him on the hook for being pretty much like, you can't talk about this ever.
Right. So if other people are doing this and they're like, well, I signed this thing. I don't want to get fucked over here. Right. Like I could lose everything. Right. It's easier for me just to say, no, it didn't happen. Right. And it's gone. Right. I'm sure a lot of people would do that.
There would have had to be some type of cover up though. That's what I don't, they're like with the amount of 5 gunshots, that close in between 2 military bases. Like I just have a real tough time with it.
The other thing is one of the things that was issued as a piece of evidence was like an incident report. And Dan, I kind of wanted to ask you about this particular piece because one of the things about the incident report said like this was an evidence of a hoax because the incident report, while it looked real, like it was said to have like pay ranks instead of like actual ranks. And Morse said, well, this wasn't the official this wasn't the official document, like the official incident report. He said that we would write up incident reports prior to submitting official ones so that they could be reviewed before you would file us like a official one. And this is how we kind of did it unofficially. Now, in your time in the Navy, did you have to do any reports where you would write, you know, you would write an informal report first?
Pre-report.
Pre-report?
In my line of work when I was in the Navy, I didn't have to write reports. I kept logs. We had engineering logs. And so with engineering logs, usually you didn't really keep like two copies. Sometimes we would if it was something weird, like when the logs get fucked up, like you manage to drop them in the bilge and they fucking get all wet and all this shit. You know, you would keep like two logs sometimes just to be like, okay, here's one, whatever. And here's one that looks nice. And here's the one that's like, I'm actually taking like whatever. Usually it was kind of frowned upon to do that. But
that's, yeah, in my line of work, it's frowned upon to do that too.
But is it, hey, let's say Andrew, your friend of a friend, I know it's frowned upon, but I bet that happens a lot where guys write the report, write a rough draft, send it to a union rep or something in an email, right? Hey, take a peek at this before I submit it officially.
Yeah, well, you get somebody to read it over before you submit it.
Yeah.
Right?
Sometimes we had to rewrite logs. Like something maybe got miscommunicated or something like that. And then once it's on the log, like our whole rule of thumb was like you get three line outs, which is like you get three corrections. That's it. If you took down the wrong number or you misread a gauge or something and you read it wrong, you get three line outs and then you have to rewrite the whole log. So, it is possible that, you know, you can write these things out, but yeah, there's a bit of few questions about that document as to whether it was an actual official document or it was, you know, if it was actually real at the thing. I think one of the, at least in Pinson's investigation, when he did it, and he was talking to one of the officers who had been on McGuire Air Force Base and would have had knowledge or reported to have said that they would have had intimate knowledge of this if it had occurred. They said when Pinson presented him with this, the document that Morse had kind of submitted as evidence, they said that there was a certain section that was referring to kind of like, what was it? It was like unfounded or something like that, stuff that had been unconfirmed, information that had been unconfirmed. And when he pointed to that, the Air Force Base official kind of said, no, we wouldn't do that because you only write down the facts. You only write down what can be corroborated, what can be confirmed. You wouldn't write down. Of course, that could also lend credence to the point that you said that it was like a rough draft, that they were just writing down like, this isn't confirmed yet. So, you know, we wouldn't hand this one in or something like that. So, I guess it could, you know, you could put it on both sides, I suppose,
yeah,
if you really wanted to.
But my thing is this, it's like, I could imagine Morse in his position being like, okay, well, I have access to my unofficial reports that I write before I hand in my official one. And then when you give the official one off, it's like, that's handed off, it's gone. So it's like, especially in 1978, like, you know, obviously you're doing it on the typewriters, you're doing it by hand. Like, it would make sense that he would have access to a copy that, you know, it's kind of frowned upon for you to be doing.
Yeah, but what are you
going to
do?
Kind
you
of standard
put that
practice
in your personal files? Like, I don't know. It's not official then. I wouldn't
yeah, but
take
may, he could but have here's fu- the thing though.
He could have jotted anything he fucking wanted on there. He didn't submit it to anybody. He could have just made the whole entire fucking thing up. Guy went and saw Close Encounters 2 months ago and came up with the
you're
fucking fantastic
there, Andrew,
story.
You're sitting there, Andrew. You're sitting there. You've seen this. You've seen the shooting. You've seen the body. You're writing your report, right? You write your rough draft and then you submit it. And then you're looking at your rough draft, right? And you're like, I know I should throw this in the garbage, but I also saw an alien body.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm also not in the military and I'm not going to get like that fucking, that's fucking high level of fuckery, boys.
Yeah, but there's high level fuckery slap everywhere.
Yeah, but you're not just getting a slap on the wrist for that.
You're like, dead.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know.
Hence why he's using a fake name to report this shit.
Yeah, it could very possibly be. So it's, yeah, the entire case is, it's wild. Like the entire thing is wild. Like you have everything that's, it's kind of nuts. You got shots fired. You've got UFOs flying around a military base. All the hallmarks of a great, UFO cover up, strange blue beret, you know, men in black showing up, retrieving this extraterrestrial body, flying it to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. But again, it's like you really only have the two sources. We have the two sources. You have Morse. You have Morse, and in the correspondence that he had with Stringfield and Hall, and then you have Filer, who came forward later. But the thing is, like, they knew of Filer. Filer, I think, went on record saying that he had knowledge of the events. But the details of what he actually knew didn't really come out until that book was published in 2019, I believe. His whole version, the details of what kind of happened leading up to that. Before that, you really just had what Morse had told, that he had been dispatched. They had no knowledge of the shooting or anything like that. It's just like they had found that alien and just that it had been shot. Like, that was it. It's a cool little one, and it kind of sits down there on the back. And I believe, I don't think Greer had anything to do with this one. I think what I found kind of interesting was this weird thing when I went into the report about NIDS was how NIDS, who is involved with stuff like Skinwalker Ranch and UFOs and, Bigelow, who kind of, has a hard on for this stuff, and how they were really hard on Stephen Greer. Like, they brought up Greer like in 2000, and they were like, Greer's a fucking con man. Like, they really, really hate Stephen Greer for some reason. There's this weird animosity in the their published newsletter, which included research into this case file and then some other things. And they talked about how Greer has no idea what he's doing. And it's kind of a whole thing. So I found this kind of like, I found that really interesting. It's just this weird little schism between Greer, who some people, a lot of people consider legit. And, he brought a lot of stuff out into the open with his sources. And, the documentaries that he put out, was Phenomenon? No, what was the one that he put
Phenomenon,
out?
Phenomenon, Disclosure, Sirius.
All the stuff that he put out. Sea Steady stuff.
And
right. And then you have
E5 app or whatever.
And then you have NIDS in there, who is like, they're posing themselves, I guess, as a legitimate scientific investigative squad or whatever, and institution. And they go in there and they're telling that, Greer's full of shit. Like, it's so weird.
the aspect of this that I really like that, makes me believe that there's a great, like, maybe it's not all true, but I believe this account. I believe something fucked up happened at this base. Is that for me, it's like, yeah, they say no corroborating evidence. There wasn't then, but like now when you look at the whole like spectrum of like all the UFO stories we've ever told, like this story corroborates with a ton of others, right? Where this person Morse would have no idea that like to tie this stuff in. Right. But like looking back now, you can look at this and be like, man, like, the UFO is buzzing the bases. There are so many accounts of that. We have confirmations of that actually happening from the US government now. Them creating this thing off in the middle of the night in some like rushed fashion to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where, we know about they had some sort of foreign technologies division. Like this guy, these kind of weird things line up for me where I'm like, if this guy was trying to hoax it, he wouldn't have known this other information well enough, because he wouldn't have had the broad.
This didn't come out till 85, right? At that MUFON conference. Now,
but even like, then, that's not this, enough info.
Well, no, I know, but what I'm saying, basically what I'm trying to say is like, did all of this come out in that report, or has stuff been added to this story as time's been going on? Because this wasn't further investigated till what, 2001?
No, this came out with the most of the information, like I said, not the details preceding up to where Morse enters the story, all of that was kind of added by Filer later. And then the parts about the retrieval of the body, the UFOs, like that part, that's all part of, that was all part of Stringfield's report, that paper that he published in 1985 for the MUFON conference.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Right? Like that to me, that where I'm like, God damn, man. Like he lined a lot of stuff up when he wouldn't have known that it lined up. You know what I mean? Like for him, he didn't have the full picture of what we know now about all these like UFO encounters and stories and what's gone on, right? So to me, looking back at this now, I give it more credibility. I think something did happen there, and I think that there was a big cover up.
They shot an alien.
So what are you thinking?
I think they fucking shot an alien, and they packed it up. They took it to Wright Patterson. They put it in Hangar 18 in the fucking pink jelly we talked about, and it's been sitting there ever since. And now we say, oh, might have been too many people. Someone would have came forward. What if the fucking neuralizer is a real device and they actually just wiped fucking memory?
There you go. I think you cracked it.
Yeah, it's called LSD.
78. We're in 78. We're in peak. We're in MK Ultra time here, are we not?
Yeah. Yep. It's like, oh, what you think you saw, you did not see. Drink this water.
They're using LSD darts. Fucking shooting them at you.
They just dump a big bag in like the fucking cafeteria coffee. Just like pink coffee pot. Just dump it all in there. Yeah, all right.
Cheers, everyone. cheers and coffee.
And then,
in order, son.
And then people say, man, I could have swore I found an alien on the tarmac last night. He was shot.
My hands are talking to me. That's way more interesting.
and they're like, oh, we better do
snozzberries taste like snozzberries.
We better do a fucking drug test on Johnson over there. And all of a sudden he's got record amounts of LSD in his system still. And they're like, yeah, no.
Base-wide announcement. Drug tests have been suspended for the next month. Mandatory drug testing has been suspended for the next month.
Right? Well, then they threaten you. Then they bring you into an interrogation room, threaten you, be like, hey, listen, you're never going to talk about this shit again, or we're going to like discharge you for being a drug addict. We have your test results, right? And we're going to ruin your life.
I think there'd be a couple more reports about people getting dosed with LSD. The entire military base.
Hey, listen, couldn't get jobs anymore. There's tons of reports of people getting dosed with LSD.
Yes.
Morse's life was ruined. He couldn't get work after this or anything. And he used a fucking pseudonym.
Yeah, Morse cites this as the why he found difficulty finding employment post the event.
Because he's a fucking alien murderer.
Yeah,
no, Morse PTSD. Didn't shoot him. It was the other guy.
Oh.
He was, what's it when you call it? It's not a willing participant, but you're like
an accomplice.
He was there. He didn't do anything to stop it. He didn't do anything to stop it.
He was an accomplice.
Yeah. Right.
He was. I mean, the one thing for the story that is obviously hard to get wrap your head around is why just the one alien? Where was his buddies in the craft? Why'd they just drop him off? Was it like,
because he was the one that they let out to preach the good news, just like that fucking guy on Sentinel Island or whatever that went out there with the Bible. And then
they shot him with arrows.
The last same island thing. On the Earth. Same thing.
History repeats itself.
Yeah. I'm going to go talk to these guys.
The last island to be infiltrated on Earth was that island. And some ballsy Christian was like, I can do it. No,
have
you guys
can't. Heard the good news? Nope, arrow in the face.
Maybe the alien was on a fucking night mission. You know, if when you're like back in high school, like you do night missions, and there's a fucking abandoned car on the Coca-Cola for like a few weeks, and it's got a nice sound system. You're like, all right, I'm gonna drop you off. I'm gonna swing around the block. You smash the window. You grab the speaker box. I'll be right back. You jump in the car and we drive away. Maybe that's what the ET was thinking. His buddies are up hovering above. They drop him off. He doesn't get very far. He doesn't speak the language.
He got blasted.
And they're like, oh, fuck. And they just take off. Just leave him.
Run. The other thing that would kind of make sense to me is that, you know, perhaps he was just the only one shot. Like there was others running around, but that's the only one that they
it's the only like, one they saw in the headlight. I mean, if they didn't see him in the headlight, they probably wouldn't have seen him at all.
Yeah.
It's a fucking cool case, though. I mean, there's not too many where an alien is shot, like at least claimed to be shot. Like this has got to be the only one.
Yeah, at least with the ones that we had, that it's like stuff has been shot, but the bodies have never been recovered. You know, like this one of actually having an alien being fired upon.
It's a confrontation,
you know, a weapon.
Yeah, a confrontation between alien and military security. Shot him 5 times,
and then found the body. You know, yeah, I mean, there's other accounts of extraterrestrials being fired at. Or, you know, other extraterrestrials or other types of beings or stuff being shot at or maybe clipped. And, you know, there's reports of, what was the one that we found? Even the one we talked about, the last cryptid we talked about, the, just slipping my mind right now.
Dan's heart needs to recharge.
Yeah.
Forgetting.
when we talked about our last, like even cryptids, like being shot and being wounded or something like that. You've seen that, but
yeah, but not an actual
body being recovered. That's something, or, you know, recovering bodies, even like the Roswell report of Roswell, or like the Aztec UFOs, where it's like you have bodies that are recovered after the fact, like that they died in the crash or shortly after, but having an actual, military personnel fire on an alien and then have that body recovered is something that's, you don't hear about very often.
Yeah. It's a fucking cool one. Nonetheless.
All right. Well, let us know your thoughts. We want to know, we look at this case, you've listened to the case file, what do you think? Do you think there's some underlying cover-up here that lines up with a lot of things, or is it a lot of hoo-ha? You let us know in the comments. We want to hear. We want to know what you think.
Hell yeah. If your uncle is one of these people that have been sitting in silence and they're, you know, they're now 88, we want to hear a deathbed confession. Call in the Cosmic Channels, let us know. Imagine that. Imagine we got someone. Like, I was on the Air Force Base back in 1978.
I was there.
Nailed it. I know what I saw!
I seen it.
Yeah.
Anyways, fun case file. Who do we got this week for Theorite of the Week?
Ooh, this week, Theorite of the Week. You know, there's a ton of ways you can become Theorite of the Week, but one of the easier ways, well, it's not easier, it's got to be good, but just head to wherever you can give us a 5-star review and drop us a nice, thoughtful 5-star review. And maybe you will end up Theorite of the Week, just like RBD Jack from Canada.
Ooh.
He gave us a 5-star review. It's called Unsin Conspiracy 5-star. First off, I can't stop listening. From Northern Alberta, former FSJ BC resident, I'm 3 months in and I finally got to episode 105, and that's all while driving for work, 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 2-shifts, so 5 on, 2 off. From meat draw drunk to no more prolapsers, that's a sad day. Love this show and I try to recommend it to everyone I can. Keep it up, guys. Cheers. The title is for the Titanic episode and Braden's mush mouth. Unsin Conspiracy? I don't know. 100% recommendations to anyone looking for good belly laughs while tearing up and wanted to catch up on some knowledge. Lebanese Mongoose, Zell, Braden, Dan, Mr. Conspiracy, Andrew, Aussie, bye. Y'all rock. Cheers. Here's to the next 100 plus to catch up on.
Cheers.
RBD Jack from Canada. Hey, thanks, buddy. That's what we do this for. Everyone, you know, slaving away. And hopefully this helps you get through your day a little better. Speaking of that, if you want to help us help you, patreon.com. Easiest way to support the show. We do this for free. Everything you get from us is for free. You can always get it for free. But if you feel so inclined, we got a ton of bonus stuff for you. Right? So if you like the show and you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/alientheoristpodcast. Donate to us. And in return, we will also give you probably what, 250 hours of bonus content?
At least.
You got After Hours, Confidentials, Nerds. You got the Mongoose collection, all the Mongoose files in one place. You got, you know, all the skits in one place, compilations. You got everything.
Sports,
everything you ever want. Co-conspirators.
Andrew and Danime. Dad Bob.
D&D. And Nerds. The Fabled Ouija number 3.
Oh, no, you don't want to listen to that.
No, you fucking don't want to listen to it.
It's all on there.
Scrub it. Get rid of it.
And the best of all, if you hate ads, it's ad-free. And early. A week early, actually, I do believe, is what we've been striving for lately. And this week's newest supporters, the newest beauties, the newest members of the Theorite community, we got Kimberly Venenix. Juanathan? Interesting spelling. New one for me. Manny the Great. Sheldon Coates. Xander Coates? Back to back family members?
Siblings?
Cousins?
Hey, Xander, just to let you know, Sheldon's beating you.
Yeah, he pledged more. Bagel Island.
Interesting.
I hope that's a company. If it is, order some bagels.
Send us some bagels. Please.
Bekong 171. Thank you very much for supporting the show. We really appreciate it.
And as we always say at the end of these things, keep those eyes on the skies.
See you in After Hours.